A Simple Thing, written by Iridan, read by Marianas. Chapter 5. Tamad. Muspelga was so small that Din almost shot right past it. Despite what Fett had said about restless Tuskens, Din had had no trouble crossing the Dune Sea. He'd ridden easy, following the suns as they tracked across the sky, but since he'd been off-planet, Din had forgotten exactly which crumbling jut of rock marked Muspelga out from the rest of the desert. Sleeping Anuba, sleeping Anuba, sleeping Anuba, Din thought, studying the rocks as they flashed past. The problem was that anything could look like a sleeping Anuba, and all the red-banded rocks looked more or less the same. The Tuskens believed that Tatooine had once been a lush green planet brimming with life, as much as a jungle on Kashyyyk or Endor. But to Din, it looked like the desert had existed forever, expansive and sun-blasted and maddeningly hard to navigate in. Getting between larger towns like Mos Eisley and Mos Espa was easy enough, but Muspelga wasn't on any nav charts, and there were hundreds of tiny settlements hiding out in the sands. Most were hard to find by design. The small settlements lacked the protection of gangster outfits or spaceports or even Bestine's maze of canyons. Their only protection was their anonymity. Only a frantically waving small humanoid in white robes and goggles saved Din from skimming past Muspelga entirely and getting himself lost in the Dune Sea. He caught sight of the figure out of the corner of his eye, realized that the rock the figure was standing on was shaped like an Anuba lounging in the dunes, and turned off the sands. Within a few minutes, Din found himself aimed for a cluster of white buildings lazing about in the long shadow of a towering red butte. Muspelga. Tatooine was home to a galaxy of towns like Muspelga. Settlers would venture out into the desert, build up a few vaporators, pack together in a fistful of homes clustered around a wind-battered cantina, and scrape out a living for a generation or six. Then the sands would come and bury the town, or the Tuskens would push back against expansion, or the water wells would run dry and the town would wither up like a tree cut from its root and disappear back into the sands. Muspelga probably still had a good few years left in her, though. From what Din had seen, its people were tough. Not just anyone would stick around to fight a greater crate dragon, after all. Muspelga's people didn't rely on just the vaporators or a few half-dry mines for income. They hunted and traded animal parts, kept livestock, made things. Now they were even growing black melons and polta beans. Din saw vines curling up out of the sands, fragile beanstalks wavering in the wind. If Fett gets his way, Muspelga will change. Din had read over the agreement Fett had pulled together before climbing aboard the speeder this morning. He'd felt that he owed it to the town, at least, to make sure he wasn't bringing them terms that would grab them by the throat, that would chain them, like any terms from Jabba would have. Fett didn't want much from Muspelga, except safe passage between Mos Eisley and Bestine, where Fett was hoping to access freighters and smugglers willing to run Mumble's turnaround, letting him and his fledgling outfit skirt around most of the Hutt-controlled hyperlanes. I don't know if Vanth will want that kind of trouble, though. Fett had assured Din that he had no intention of trading in slaves, but moving other illegal goods, mostly weapons and spice, through a place as remote as Muspelga would still catch the attention of the cartels. The terms aren't bad, even if the trouble would be. Fett was willing to garrison Muspelga and ensure its protection with his own men, once he had them, though Din doubted he was supposed to mention that while negotiating with Vanth, and he was willing to feed them, too. Jabba's palace had grown its own food for centuries. Muspelga was off to a good start with its little patches of black melons and polta beans, but not much else would grow out here. The little town was humming as Din slowed his approach and started to look for a place to stow the speeder. Everyone seemed to be doing something, hauling silicate or driving banthas or tending to the melon vines, even the kids. Even the Tuskens, who Din was surprised to see. There were three young warriors with rifles in their hands posted up on top of the cantina, watching the desert carefully. The Sun Rock decided to stick around then, thought Din, pleased. He had liked the Sun Rock warriors. They'd been more friendly than most other bands, willing to work with Mos Pelgo despite their history, though Din supposed that a greater crate offered a pretty good reason for even the fiercest enemies to band together. The fact that some of the Sun Ra had stuck around and were apparently keeping watch for the town was an encouraging sign. If someone like Vanth could grow to see sense and strike a truce with the Tuscans, and keep it once the threat of getting eaten by an overgrown worm passed, maybe he'd see sense and ally with Fat after all. 15 ingots of Beskar. A Camtono, Din thought. 16 if he comes back to speak with Fat directly. I can do this. Din had never tried to negotiate anything on behalf of a client before. The only negotiations Din was good at were the sort that involved a blaster, but Vanth knew Din, had been friendly enough after the crate. I can do this. If Din did well, Fett would give Din more work. More work meant more Beskar, and more time away from the prickly, hollow mood on the light cruiser. More work meant more time away from Din's own dark thoughts. Din shook his head, banishing the thought of the light cruiser, and set his determination. He could do this. Several people, most of them covered in vaporator grease or mine dust, saw Din come in. They tensed at first, before they recognized his armor and began to wave excitedly. Din lifted a hand back as he stopped the bike outside of the cantina and stepped down, adjusting his cloak so that it fell over the darksaber and his spear so it didn't jab him in the back of the knee. Another night's sleep had done Din good. His legs still hurt, but it was clarifying, energizing. Each step sharpened his focus. His wrist and his head barely hurt at all. He'd even managed to keep down a plate of Yazda, a thick Tuscan breakfast made with puntan seeds, and had managed an entire cup of Ushib's calf without nausea churning in his gut. Work had always helped Din focus. The bruise on his leg, now solidly blue and purple, pressed into all of his muscles and throbbing lowly with every beat of Din's heart, helped too, but Din didn't want to think about that while he was working. The memory of Fett's hands on Din's body was never far from the surface of his thoughts. Fennec had put Din through his paces too. He'd gone to find her after haggling with Fett, and true to Fett's word, she'd been more than happy to shoot at Din. Her aim was unnervingly good. It had been fun to duck and weave and dart around the training ring, flashing sunlight in her eyes off the polished edges of his Beskar, trying to confuse her. Taking shots from a blaster never really hurt. Din could always feel it, since his Beskar had to defuse the force of the bolt, but only heavy-duty bolts, like pulse rifle charges, ever made enough of an impact to hurt. I could get used to it, Din thought to himself as he approached the cantina. He didn't know how to feel about that. He could get used to it. Staying in the palace, hunting for Fett, sparring, watching the suns come up from the long, narrow window in his room. His leg ached. He probably shouldn't get used to it. Din shook the thought off like a bantha scattering flies, reaching the cantina and stepping inside. No one had drawn on Din as he'd come through the town, which was probably a good sign. He held onto that hope and gave himself a few heartbeats for his vision to adjust. It was just as dim and grimy as it had been the first time Din had crossed the threshold, except this time Cobb Vanth was leaning against the bar, waiting for him, instead of off wandering the town. The same Weequay was behind the bar. When he heard Din's deliberately loud footfall, the old marshal turned around and broke into a wide smile. Mando! Vanth boomed, pushing himself off the bar to his feet. He looked exactly like he had when Din had seen him last. Vanth was still tall and skinny, all legs, his hair a ridiculous riot of gray, and his red bandana tucked firmly around his neck. He'd probably look just like that for another 20 years. Din smiled. Haven't seen you in a turn or two. We thought you'd hit the block and stay gone. How are you? Vanth crossed the distance between them and shook Din's hand with the same sturdy, cheerful energy he'd had parleying with Tuscans and shooting at a crate dragon. Fine, Din said. You? Town's still standing. Yeah, we're doing pretty good, said Vanth. No more crates, at least, and those new friends we've made are real good at scaring off the worst of the Kung in these parts. He looked at Din's boots, checked the hip not hidden by the folds of Din's cloak, then frowned. The expression creased his entire face. Where's the kid? You didn't lose him, did you? Din tried not to wince, remembering the terror in his throat as the Dark Troopers had risen into the sky on Tython, Grogu disappearing with them. He's fine. I found his people, Din said. Jedi. He's gone with him for training. Oh, Vanth relaxed. The kid had had that effect on people. Everywhere Dan had gone, the kid had stolen hearts, even from the oddest places. Worn-out mercs like Kara, gruff mechanics like Peli, stringy ex-slaves like Vanth, Jedi in hiding, even a career criminal like Greef Karga. Everyone had loved the kid. Even Dr. Pershing had been protective of him, though Dr. Pershing had been too much of a coward to stop Gideon from using Grogu's blood for whatever Gideon had wanted it for. "Didn't know there were any of those left anymore," Vanth continued. "They as cool as they were in the stories?" "I didn't ever hear any stories about Jedi," Din admitted. He hadn't even heard the word until the Armorer had mentioned it down in the Forge when Din had brought Grogu to her. "The two I've met have been capable." The Jedi who'd come for Grogu had cut through 20 Dark Troopers in the time it had taken Din to bring down one, and the Jedi hadn't gotten his head kicked in like Din. Kara told him a little about that Jedi. That Jedi was Luke Skywalker, the hero of the Rebellion. And Ahsoka Tano would have been able to take on Morgan Elsbeth on her own. Din had just helped clear the way a little. Vanth sighed, sounding wistful. "I always wanted to be a Jedi," he said. He gestured Din in the direction of the bar, where a batter table and a cluster of stools waited off to the side with a view of the door. "When I was younger and wilder, there was a story going around about a kid in the quarters who got free and went off to train with the Jedi. Years and years ago. We thought it was all smoke until we started seeing him on the Holonet. He went on to become some big hero in the Clone Wars. When he died, half the planet was drunk for a week." "I heard the same thing happened when Jabba died," Vanth snorted. "That was different. That was a party. At least up until the Empire went down right after him and the whole planet started chewing itself to pieces. When Skywalker died, we all drank like someone come and shot our mothers."
Din startled. "Skywalker?"
Vanth blinked.
"Yeah, Anakin Skywalker. You've never heard of him? Big general in the Clone Wars. The hero with no fear, they called him. He died on the steps of the Jedi Temple on Coruscant, folks said, trying to protect the younglings."
Din took a breath. "The Jedi who has Grogu, the kid. His name is Luke Skywalker." Vanth thought for a moment, clearly trying to place the name, then gave up and shrugged. "Don't know him. Could be related, maybe. There's a lot of Skywalkers. It's not an uncommon name around these parts or anywhere along the Sorrow Lanes."
"A slave name?"
"The Sorrow Lanes were the routes across Hutt space where slaves were moved." Din avoided them when he could. Din was a skilled fighter, but slaving gangs were tenacious and there was a high price on Mandalorians. Mandalorians made good pit fighters, Din heard.
"I'd never heard of Jedi," Din said. "Not until I found the kid and started looking for his kind. You have?"
Vanth nodded and ushered Din over to his table, raising a finger for some spatchka. Din nodded when the bartender cocked a stony eyebrow in his direction. He'd take a glass, even if he didn't manage to work up the nerve to take his helmet off in front of Vanth. "They were never common, not really," Vanth said. "Especially not out here in Rimspace. But we all heard the stories growing up, and every now and then a Jedi would come to bargain with Jabba about something or other. Yusuf's hyperlanes, mostly. Anakin Skywalker, was a pod racer. Was a big deal. He was only a kid when he lived here on Tatooine, but he was better than most. Better than any other human. I knew some other kids that ran around on his side of the quarter. There was a big dust-up over him winning the Boonta Eve, 40 years ago? He was about my age, maybe a little younger than I was, but I was too tall and too stupid to put out in a pod." Din listened, head cocked. The Weequay bartender brought over two bottles of bright blue spatchka.
"A human pod racer?"
Din himself was a decent pilot, but he couldn't imagine racing pods. He'd seen a few of the races. 20-odd racers started every time, but no more than 12 or 13 ever made it to the finish. "Anyway," Vanth continued, "word went around the quarter that not only had Skywalker won his freedom, he'd had Jedi powers all along and was going off with two knights to learn how to be one. The next time any of us heard his name, the Clone Wars were on and Skywalker was a general, a full Jedi knight running around 100 different battles and outflying the Seppies. Even saved Jabba's kid once, though I bet it galled him something bitter."
"But what happened to the Jedi?" Din asked, leaning forward. "Where'd they all go?" Vanth tips his head back and forth, laughing a little. You really don't know? Where'd you come from? Under a rock?
I was young during the Clone Wars, said Din defensively. He didn't remember much about the world he'd come from, but it had been Outer Rim enough to fall to the Separatists without much fuss. None of the Republic forces had ever shown up to help. The only help had come from the Mandalorians. Vanth's friendly face softened a little at that. Despite a shock of gray hair, Din didn't think Vanth could be that old. He was plenty spry and crackling with energy. If Din had to guess, he'd put Vanth at maybe 50 standard. But that was older than Din, who only remembered the Clone Wars as one specific drawn-out nightmare. Vanth must have seen it from start to finish, even from the dust of Tatooine. The story in the core is that the Jedi betrayed the Republic, Vanth said, taking a pull of spatchka from his bottle. They were the generals of the clone army, the ones running the whole mess. Decimated themselves against the Seps, I guess. Story is that the few Jedi left by the end of the war saw that the war was nearly over and decided that they liked the power they'd had, so instead of giving it all up and going back to being monks, they tried to overthrow the Senate. Din snorted. The Senate, under both the Republic and the Galactic Empire, had been a joke. Vanth lifted his bottle wryly. Exactly, he said. He shrugged. I don't know, I wasn't there, but any time a core worlder says something, it's usually womptail backwards. The clones killed all the Jedi anyway, down to the kids. Maybe the generals were planning something, but the kids? The Gar lit the whole temple on Coruscant up, it was all over the HoloNet. I don't know how they got all the generals in the field. Luck, maybe, or maybe it took the Empire longer to track down full knights than they let on, but that was the end of it there on Coruscant. Can't train more Jedi if there aren't any kids left to train. Din curled his hand into a fist involuntarily. Children. He'd never thought about it, not really, that Luke Skywalker and Ahsoka Tano had been Jedi kids once, like Grogu. The Empire doesn't care about children, said Din darkly. Moff Gideon had been more than happy to hurt the kid, to use him. And on the rare occasion that the Empire had managed to find one of the coverts, they hadn't spared the foundlings. They'd razed everything to the ground, elders, warriors, and children together. No, said Vanth, they didn't. Not that the Republic was any better. All the kids the Hutt sold around didn't bother the Republic at all, did they? Din inclined his head, conceding the point. The Corps had never given a thought to the Outer Rim, unless the thought was, how can we take more from them? Way I figure it, the Jedi wanted out, said Vanth. We were told the Jedi were peacekeepers when we were kids. Diplomats, monks, they had odd powers and odd ways of doing things, but they were mostly harmless. Most around these parts think that they didn't want to fight anymore, didn't want to go along when the Republic changed its name. So the clones killed them all, made them into a common enemy, pointed the whole galaxy at them, and let loose. Like us banding together to fight the Krayt, Din thought. His stomach twisted. He knew the power of a common enemy. A common enemy had landed him with Bo-Katan, too. They had all pulled together to fight Gideon. How'd the Jedi end up generals in a war, then, if they were peacekeepers? Din asked, frowning. The Allure had called Jedi Mandalore's natural enemies. Din was learning that Mandalorians could very easily make an enemy out of anything that moved, including each other, but what glory was there in fighting a group of peacekeepers? Din thought of the ease with which Skywalker had destroyed the Dark Troopers and shook his head. Maybe the Jedi had been peaceful once, but that had been a long time ago.
Well, that I don't know, Vanth admitted. He scratched the back of his head. Karkin bad luck, maybe? Whatever the real story is, the Empire wiped him out. Worst thing they could have done for relations with Tatooine was kill Skywalker. The Master didn't give a womp, but half the planet clawed itself free to go fight for the Partisans or the Rebellion, and those of us who couldn't slip the chain made occupation a fun time for the imps. Most of us use his name to do it. It's not often you heard of a Tatooinean Jedi, you know.
Din smiled underneath his helmet. The Tuskens hadn't liked the Imperials either. Stormtrooper hunting had been an honored sport among the White Bantha.
But, said Vanth, brightening again, it's good to hear that not all the Jedi are gone. Who knows, maybe your kid will be the one to bring them back.
Maybe, Din allowed. A pang went through him.
By the time Grogu would be old enough to do much of anything, Din would be rust and dust. I don't think that the Jedi, the ones who are left anyway, are interested much in coming back. He didn't know where Luke Skywalker had taken the kid. Somewhere safe, Din hoped. Somewhere that no one like Moff Gideon would ever think to look, so that the kid could grow up happy and looked after and safe while he learned to use his powers.
"Can't say I blame him," Vanth observed.
He took another drink of Spotchka and eyed Din. Underneath his friendly exterior, Vanth had a mind like a Vornsker, sharp and watchful. Most slaves who made it to freedom had the same suspicion, the same watchfulness, much like most Mandalorians who made it through their training.
"So what brings you here, Mando? Didn't expect to see you again, to be honest. Not that it's not good to see you, mind. You still looking for other Mandalorians? Ain't seen any in these parts. Not even bounty man like you."
Din drummed his fingers on the table, restless. "I found a few others," he said, watching Vanth. "Warriors, including Boba Fett." Cobb Vanth went very still. So did the Weequay bartender, who'd made an aborted little twitch toward the underside of the bar, reaching for a blaster. Vanth had one on his hip. He wasn't wearing any armor at all, not really, aside from his thick red sweater and the bandana that Din knew Vanth wore to cover up his scars. But the bartender had a blaster under the bar, and Din had been seen coming in. His instincts twitched. Somewhere outside the cantina, someone, one of the raiders, if Din had to guess, had a blaster leveled at the back of Din's head. Din, very purposefully, laid both of his hands flat on the table. He was a fast draw, and Vanth knew it too, but Din hoped that Vanth knew that Din had no intention of hurting him.
"Thought it might come to this," said Vanth heavily. He drained his botchka. "Don't suppose it matters that I didn't know it was his armor at the time, does it?"
Din blinked, thrown.
"What?"
"We'd hoped that the bastard was dead," Vanth continued, then seemed to realize what he'd said and winced. "Who survives getting eaten by a sarlacc, anyway?"
"Fett got eaten by a sarlacc?" Din spluttered, startled.
It was Vanth's turn to stare.
"Yeah, years ago," said Vanth, slowly. "It was the talk of the desert for a while. Same day Jabba died."
"A sarlacc," Din repeated, disbelieving. He'd never seen one, having had at least the sense to avoid the places in the Great Dune Sea where the pits lurked underneath the sands. But he'd heard about them. Jabba the Hutt had liked to throw his most troublesome enemies into the pit of Carcoon while his entire court watched and cheered from the side of the barge. No one survived a sarlacc. Their stomachs were nothing but slow, churning acid, their throats ringed with teeth to prevent anyone from crawling out.
"That's the story, anyway, and I'll believe that before I believe any of the kark from the Corps about the Jedi," Vanth said.
He was frowning, brow furrowed. He cast a nervous look at the still-frozen bartender.
"You're not, here to kill me, then?"
"I'm not an assassin," said Din sharply, thoughts whirling. What had happened for Fett to end up in a sarlacc pit? Had he angered Jabba? Misstepped somehow? The web of scars all over Fett's body made more sense now. Din had thought that Fett had been too close to an explosion or a flamethrower, but acid burned just as well as fire.
"You're not here to bring me in, then? I'm told my bounty's prodigious these days."
"No. Fett doesn't. I wouldn't take a puck on you."
Din shook his head to clear it. He was thrown, but he was used to being thrown these days, and he forced himself to recover and get on with it. The gangs and slaving outfits around Tatooine might want Vanth dead, but Din wouldn't take a contract out on an ally. Din made a mental note to drop by Navarro once he secured himself a ship, and firmly suggests that the Guild refuse any contracts on Vanth, too. Vanth relaxed a fraction, which heartened Din.
"He still trusts me, then, at least a little."
"What's Fett want, then?"
"An alliance," said Din.
Vanth snorted.
"No, really," Din pressed. He kept tripping over his own thoughts.
A karking sarlacc! No wonder Fett had wanted to steal Jabba's empire from the Hutts. If Din's employers had ever fed him to a Sarlacc, he would want to destroy them, too.
Not that Din was sure he'd survive getting thrown to one. Din's own will to live was strong, as was any Mandalorian's. But crawling out of a Sarlacc was like crawling out of a black hole. Impossible to do. Even more impossible to imagine.
Focus, Mandalorian. Din was on a job. He would do well, and not just for the Beskar waiting for him if he finished the job.
The bruise on his leg throbbed. He took a breath, and very slowly reached for the datapad Fett had given him, making sure Vanth could see that Din's hands were nowhere near his blaster. He didn't want to get shot in the head, even if his Beskar would hold up to it. The resonance would make Din sick for hours.
"Here," Din said. "This is for you."
He slid the datapad across the space between himself and Vanth. Vanth took it and blinked.
"This is from Fett?"
Din nodded. "He put it together this morning."
Vanth blinked again, scrolling slowly. He read very carefully, Din noticed, as if the lines of Aurabesh weren't entirely familiar to him.
Din waited patiently, neck still prickling. The bartender had relaxed some, his hands drifting away from the hidden blaster, but whoever had Din in their crosshairs outside hadn't yet dropped their guard. Finally, Vanth looked back up.
"He wants to run goods through us," he said.
Din nodded.
"Us," Vanth repeated, sweeping hand out to encompass Mos Pelgo, its cluster of homes, its creaking vaporators, the half-dry mines underneath it all.
Din shrugged. "Fett wants to do things differently than Jabba did," he said.
Vanth's eyes sharpened.
"How differently?"
"He doesn't freight with slavers, if that's what you're asking," Din said.
"Didn't seem to care much when the worm was in charge," Vanth returned flatly. "Fett'd take a bounty on anyone, free or not. Lost a lot of friends on the network to him."
Din shrugged again.
"Maybe he grew a conscience sitting in the Sarlacc's belly," Din said. He didn't want to explain Iboria's code to Vanth. Didn't know if he even had the right words. To Iboria, a job was a job. Individual hunters could refuse whatever jobs they liked. Din had never hunted down escaped slaves, no matter how good the pay had been. But once a job was taken or a contract struck, Iboria honored his word. If Fett had joined Jabba to hunt errant smugglers and signed a long-term contract, he would have had to hunt whoever Jabba told him to hunt.
Maybe he didn't care either, Din thought, but that didn't quite align with the Fett he was getting to know.
The Fett who had offered Din help thoughtlessly, firmly. The Fett who had let Din drool all over his chest, who had run his hands through Din's hair, who had carefully laid Bacta over Din's bruises and scowled to see that Din had been hurt hunting Shalto.
Vanth snorted. "And maybe bladebacks can fly," he retorted.
Din spread his hands. "You've got his terms," he said. "All I can do is bring them to you and vouch for Fett's intentions. He wants a partnership. He doesn't want to take you over or run you out. He doesn't want to be the mining collective." Vanth studied Din with those watchful Vornsker eyes. Finally, he said, "You'll vouch for him." Din nodded. He wasn't good with words, but he could do this.
"Why?"
Vanth asked.
"He kept his word when I needed him to," Din said. "After Fett had gotten his armor back on Tython, he could have gone anywhere. He could have left Din stranded on that planet, Razorcrest in ruins, Kid gone, left with nothing but his armor and his spear. But Fett hadn't. He'd honored his word and taken Din to Morak, to Kryze, to Gideon. He'd stuck around while Din had been unconscious in a Bacta tank.
He helped me."
Din resisted the urge to dig his fingers into his leg and remember the pressure, the weight.
Vanth looked at Din for a while, then shook his head. Din's heart sank.
"I don't know, Mando," Vanth said. "We're no strangers to skirting the law here, such as it were, but this is heavy stuff. I'm gonna guess that Fett's eyeing us because Hutt's base is closed to him?"
"He is trying to get access to Mumble's turnaround, yeah," Din admitted. "Through Bestine."
"Not a bad play," said Vanth. "I don't know. The clink could be good. Better than good, have you read this? But the threat...
We're not exactly sitting Rontos out here, but we don't have a nice palace to hide in either.
Fett will protect you.
He says he'll protect us, said Vanth, tapping the datapad.
He's good for his word, Din insisted.
Vanth held up his hand. Easy, Mando. I believe you, he said, cracking a smile at last. I believe that you believe, Fett, anyway. And after what you did for us, half this town would probably follow you off a cliff, me included. But, he stressed, we don't run things like Fett does in his palace out here. I can bring his offer before the town, and we can all vote on it, but that's about all I can do for you.
Din relaxed. That's all I need, he said.
Vanth's eyes turned up at the corners. Don't get your hopes up, he warned. We're cautious folk, us. Din thought about the whole town facing the Greater Crate, shoulder to shoulder with Tuskens they hated, and snorted. Like Mandalorians are cautious, maybe. I'm gonna assume that's a compliment, said Vanth, cheerfulness returning. Come on, then. Let's go see if there's enough folks around for a quorum. If you're lucky, we'll have an answer by dinner time, and then you can lose to me at Sabacc.
I never lose at Sabacc, said Din, who'd been counting cards since he was knee-high to a womp rat.
Din didn't like gambling. Credits lost were credits that couldn't be used to feed the foundlings or refuel the crest. But if Din won every time, it hardly counted as gambling.
First time for everything, Mando, said Vanth, half rising, when a skinny, sandblasted human wrapped in white burst through the cantina door, calling for the marshal.
Whoa, Cash, easy now, said Vanth. Din blinked. This was the person who'd spotted him in the sands and had waved him over, saving him from a long and obnoxious night alone in the desert. She was human, and fairly young, still lanky like a teenager who hadn't quite finished growing. She had freckles and wild hair and a puckered scar in her cheek. Enormous goggles hid her eyes.
Sorry, Marshal. The girl, Cash, panted.
Sand and stars, girl, you run here from the rocks? Vanth asked, reaching out to steady her. Din watched with interest. The prickling on the back of his neck had finally faded. The sniper on the rooftops had decided that Din was no threat to Cop Vanth. Din was pleased that someone was taking such care with Vanth's life.
I did, said Cash.
She spotted Din's untouched bottle and looked up at him, her goggles black and unreadable. Wordlessly, Din nodded. She grinned and snatched it up, downing half before Vanth plucked it from her fingers and glared at Din.
You've got 6 months before you're old enough for Marin's brew, Vanth scolded, tucking the spatchka firmly under his arm. Mr. Mandalorian here is a bad influence.
Now, girl, what's got you all up in arms?
Sandstorm's coming, Marshal, Cash chirped.
Din stiffened. Vanth sighed. You sure?
Cash nodded. Coming in from the east, she said. Aten and Duan are already sounding the alarms. It'll be on us within the hour.
Vanth sighed again, enormously. He shot an apologetic look at Din. Sorry, Mando, he said. Quorum will have to wait.
I understand, Din said.
Sandstorms were too dangerous to ignore. He paused, a headache beginning to prickle behind his left ear, and said,
Do you have somewhere I can wait it out?
Yeah, said Vanth, dryly. My basement.
That was how, an hour later, Din found himself packed into Cobb Vanth's storm bunker with the entire town of Mos Pelgo. He'd been to Vanth's house before. Vanth had insisted. He was Tatooinean. After the crate, he'd offered his hospitality as firmly as any Tusken would offer to shelter an ally. Din had fallen asleep in Vanth's sonic while Grogu had babbled happily to himself and tossed food all over Vanth's walls. Din and the kid had slept in Vanth's bed while Vanth himself had gone from house to house in Mos Pelgo, spreading the news that the crate dragon was dead. The storm bunker was big and sturdy. Because Vanth was the town's marshal, the Allor, not that Vanth was the type to use a word like that, he was the town's leader, even if he insisted on taking votes and reaching a quorum instead of just issuing a command. Vanth had Durasteel reinforcing the sandstone walls of his basement, and when the storms came, Vanth packed everybody in underneath his house to wait it out. He used to be part of the mines, Vanth had explained, as he'd enlisted Din's help moving the town underground. When we ran the collective off, the miners sealed it up for me. It's not the worst place to wait out a howler. It really wasn't, even though Din had a Bith child pressed up against one side and a Twi'let crammed against the other. He didn't mind the crowd. A bit of claustrophobia was better than being stripped to the bone out in the sands. Tatooine's howlers were so violent that not even Beskar would protect Din. The armor would hold, but his kute would be stripped off, and there was hardly any air to breathe in a sandstorm. Din's helmet had a small rebreather, but it had a short lifespan. The sandstorm started not long after Vanth ushered a person who had to be the oldest human woman Din had ever seen into his bunker and sealed the hatch behind her. Even though there were 20 feet or more underground, the whole town heard the winds begin to shriek. All of the children were delighted to see Din again. Most of the adults were, too, calling his name and slapping his back, jostling to be closer. As the winds began to pick up, Vanth held his hands up, calling for quiet. Din was a little relieved. It had been a long time since he'd been around so many other people. "All right, you womp rats, settle down," Vanth said, stepping over sprawled legs and errant limbs. "As you may have noticed, we've got a guest with us for the storm, so I want you to be hospitable, you hear? Mr. Mando here's a hero in these parts, so we ought to give him a hero's welcome." Din groaned, but the sound was lost amid the laughter that rippled from Mos Pelgo's inhabitants.
"Spell it out for us, Marshal," Kesh called. "Does that mean we tell him the good stories, or the really good stories?"
Din cocked his head. "Stories?" he asked, loud enough to be heard over the crowd. Almost every eye in the bunker turned to him. Grins broke out across several faces, including Vanth's. "Yeah," said Vanth, nudging Kesh with a boot. "It's tradition when there's a sandstorm. We tell stories. You ever hear a good old-fashioned Tatooine folktale?" Din shook his head, curious now. He'd heard just about the entire history of the Tuskens, but that was only because Tusken story singers told the whole thing at once. He hadn't heard any stories from the other residents of Tatooine, people like Vanth and his town. Vanth's grin broadened, like he knew something that Din didn't. "You heard him, folks," Vanth said, finally finding a spot to slot himself against the wall. The little space he'd claimed was immediately lost. The town let him get comfortable, then pressed in on every side. He didn't seem to mind. "Go on, then. Kesh, want to start?" So Din sat and listened to stories while the sandstorm raged outside. Some of the stories he heard were parables, children's stories. How Kirik Fly got her wings, Bantha Mother finds water, the women and the sons. Others were skewed for an older audience. The Bladeback Boar's many wives made Din blush underneath his helmet, skin tingling where it pressed against the edges of his Beskar plates. "You have any good stories for us, Mando?" Kesh asked, after she'd finished an extremely bawdy tale she called Anubis Steals the Moons. Din was faintly scandalized she'd told it around children, though none of the kids had acted particularly scandalized themselves. "What do Mandalorians talk about around the cookfire?" Din shifted, uncomfortable with the sudden interest pricking up from all sides. "Our battles, mostly," he said. He didn't know any stories about animals or magic or anything like that. Mandalorians didn't make up stories to explain how the suns moved across the sky, or sing about clever Anuba tricking Bantha Mother out of her moon so that the pack could hunt at night. "Or if we do, I don't know any songs or stories." It occurred to Din, pressed in together with all of Mos Pelgo, that maybe some Mandalorians did have stories like that. Din dimly remembered hearing about an old Mandalorian king taming and riding a mythosaur, but he didn't remember any of the details. There was something prickling in his mind about the stars, too, but Din couldn't remember why stars were significant, aside from serving as waypoints as one navigated the galaxy. "Maybe Kreese knows." Din winced at the thought of asking her. "Or maybe Fett has some. Maybe his father learned a few stories as a foundling."
"Battles?"
A little Bith crowded even closer, staring up at Din with open fascination.
"Cooler than fighting a dragon?"
Din couldn't help but smile. "No," he said, "not quite like that. But I have a brother," he said, settling on the easiest word he could find to describe Paz, "who wrestled a rancor once."
"Tell us,"
a Twi'lek boy demanded. All of the adults were smiling and nodding, the children crowding in to hear a new story. Din looked at Vanth a little helplessly. Vanth grinned and waved a hand. "Go on," his eyes said. "Tell them." So Din haltingly did as he was asked. He skirted any stories of his own exploits. Din was too old to boast about bounties brought down or rivals outsmarted like a newly armored warrior, but he shared a few of the stories he'd heard in his younger days. He kept names to himself, but shared Paz's exploits on Canto Bite. He'd been trampled by a Falthier while Din had laughed himself sick, and the time that Annika had accidentally married a prince on Shu Torun. He talked about the time Din had been on Kashyyyk, climbing Russia trees, and had been nearly eaten by a bird the size of a spaceship, and about the Foundling's Trial, where all the children of the tribe had been dropped off in the wilderness and told to find their way back to the covert. Din had taken the trial twice, mostly despite Paz, and had charted his way through the luminous jungles of Felucia and the rusting minefields of Braca. Everyone, even the adults, listened with rapt fascination. Din didn't know what to do with all their attention, but it was easier to talk to the kids, so he kept his focus on them and answered all their questions. I guess if you've never left Tatooine, even somewhere like Braca is exciting. Where haven't you been? One of the kids, a green Rhodian with enormous star-flecked eyes, asked in awe. Din shrugged. Coruscant? For some reason, that made all of the kids giggle hysterically, and then they took turns quizzing Din on core worlds he'd visited. Exactly two, Abrogata Re and Barleth, both on jobs that Din felt vaguely children shouldn't hear about, getting louder and louder while the sandstorm howled outside.
Mr. Mandalorian?
One child finally asked, her voice rising over her friends as Din told them all, in the vaguest terms possible, about hunting a spice dealer through the Museum of Barleth while trying desperately to dodge museum security droids.
Will you come and be our new marshal?
Din looked at Vanth again, baffled, as all the adults roared with laughter. Hey, said Vanth, laughing himself. He dropped his voice into a mock whisper, which made the kids laugh even harder.
Job's yours if you want it. Gotta warn you, though, pay's pretty terrible, and some of the locals are really weird.
That set off a round of protests and laughter, as Mos Pelgo's people lobbed gentle insults at one another, each trying to dodge the title of Mos Pelgo's strangest resident. The joking pulled the attention away from Din, though, which let him relax. He didn't mind it, the press of bodies, the warmth, the noise. It wasn't being down in the covert, sharing Tingilar around a circle while the older warriors told of the jobs they took or the fights they'd won, the places they'd seen, and the foundlings tussled like Lothwolf cubs. But it wasn't much different, either. It's nice, Din thought to himself, settling down to watch as a battle-scarred old miner called a laughing Vanth something indelicate. It's comfortable. That was when Din felt a faint pressure on one of his gauntlets. He looked down and found the Bith curiously tugging at the gauntlet's edge, his face reflected in the Beskar. Tobes, one of the adults, not a Bith, Din noticed, started, but Din held up his other hand. It's all right, he said. Here, hold on. He released the seal and let Tobes pull Din's gauntlet off. Din shook his wrist out and smiled down at the Bith, even though Tobes couldn't see it. Tobes didn't even seem to care. He held the gauntlet up, eyes enormous.
Wow,
he said. Let me see it for a second, Din said, realizing that the gauntlet was still active and that the wrong button would put a hole in Vanth's house or shoot a jet of fire over the heads of the village. Tobes handed the gauntlet back reluctantly. Din fiddled with it for a moment, making sure it was deactivated, then handed it back.
Wizard!
I want to see, one of the girls declared, shoving her way closer. And within minutes, Din found himself picked over like a bantha carcass. By the time the sandstorm quieted, Din had only managed to keep hold of his cuirass, which was too heavy for most of the kids to pry off, and his helmet. The rest of his armor had slowly made its way through the group, passed from child to child with much excited discussion. Din tried not to keep track of every piece. It wasn't like Mos Pelgo's kids were going to run off with any of it. The sandstorm, while mostly quiet, still licked at the walls outside, and none of the kids here were scrum rats or scavengers. They all had parents, or at least adults minding them. All had homes, however small, to go back to once the storm broke. None of them would try to sell a piece of Din's armor on the black market. Mos Pelgo was so small and insular that there probably wasn't a black market. He couldn't stop himself from tracking some of it, though. even as a few kids gathered even closer and started prodding curiously at the dense circuitry running through his kute.
"Mr. Mandalorian, what's this mean?"
a gap-toothed human boy called, holding up the pauldron with Din's signet stamped on it.
"It's a mudhorn," said Din.
"What's that?"
"It's an animal," Din explained. "From a different planet, Arvalo 7. Mudhorns live there in caves."
"Are they big?"
The boy's eyes were wide.
"Yes."
"How big?"
"Big enough to break true ribs, but small enough to get levitated by a magic toddler."
"A little smaller than a bantha, maybe," Din said. "But meaner. They have long horns on their faces and a mean temper."
"Not that having a Mandalorian shooting fire in your face would put you in a good mood." Din probably could have approached the mudhorn with a little more thought to strategy.
"Why'd you have one on your armor?"
another kid asked. She was a Twi'lek with bright orange leku and only one front tooth. She had one of Din's leg plates and was turning it over, looking for other signets.
"Mr. Marshall didn't have anything cool on his armor, except for the dent in his head."
"Helmet," Vanth corrected, touching his forehead gingerly. He darted a nervous look at Din.
"That dent was there when I found it," he added.
Din smiled. "Everyone always goes for the helmet," he said. He knocked his fist lightly against his own, the resonance soft. "We don't mind much, we're pretty sturdy." Vanth cracked a smile at that.
"Mr. Mandalorian,"
the girl said imperiously, determined to have her question answered. Din turned his attention back to her.
"The mudhorn is my signet," he explained. All the kids gave him blank looks.
"My sign, my crest. I earned it. My Allure, the leader of my tribe, gave it to me so the other warriors would know who I am. It tells other Mandalorians that I'm a good warrior, a good hunter."
"Cool,"
the boy holding Din's pauldron breathed, tracing the mudhorn's dramatic features with his fingers.
"Mr. Marshall,"
said the Twi'lek, who now looked incredibly unimpressed with Vanth.
"Why didn't you have a signet?"
"Signet," said Vanth patiently. He shrugged. "I'm not a Mandalorian, Koyi, and I was only borrowing the armor. Any mark on it belongs to its real owner."
"Who's that?"
The adults in the room, mostly content up until now to watch the kids affectionately and laugh at Din as they climbed all over him, went very still. Din couldn't help but feel a bit defensive of Fett on Fett's behalf. Fett wasn't that bad. Anybody who fussed over a little bruise as much as Fett had couldn't be that fearsome.
"I don't know what he was like when he worked for Jabba," Din reminded himself. "He survived in the desert with the Tuskens. That means he's hard, even if he's been kind to me."
"That would be Boba Fett," said Vanth calmly. He looked at Din. "The King of Tatooine."
"I don't know if he's going with that title," Din muttered.
Fett didn't have much of Tatooine under his thumb, not really. Mos Eisley and a few moisture farms, a few spice lanes. He'd have more if Vanth agreed to Fett's terms, but a few dusty towns and vaporators didn't make a kingdom.
Vanth snorted. "What's he going with, then? Fett the Hutt?"
Din chuckled.
"No, I don't think he'll go with that either. I don't think he's trying to draw the attention of the Hutts any more than he already has. And he's a Mandalorian. Names are important. He'll keep his own name. His father's name."
Din ignored the very old, mostly healed-over pang of jealousy that fluttered through his ribs. Din had never been given a Mandalorian clan name. He didn't need one, of course, but still. It had rankled as a kid, to watch Paz go with Palace Vizsla and the Skaratos choose Annika. Din understood it now. He hadn't had much to offer as a kid. He'd been small and untrained and scared of everything. Din had thought sometimes that the Mandalorian who rescued him, the one who had carried him up out of the smoke and blaster fire, would have adopted Din if he'd lived, but he died not long after he dropped Din off with the covert. By the time Din had been strong enough to win some fights and prove his worth to a clan, there hadn't been any clans left with the resources to take in a foundling. The only one in the tribe with the resources to raise a child alone had been the Armorer, and she was the Allure. She couldn't have adopted Din into her clan, even if Din had sometimes wanted her to. Din and the rest of his age group had been raised by the tribe, and names had ceased to be that important anyway. The Empire is looking for Vizlas, the older warriors had said. Looking for Skiradas, for Raos, for Ordos. Better to just be a Mandalorian of the tribe. Better to be no one. Better to be safe. Vanth just grunted.
Didn't your armor have little skulls on it? Kesh piped up, looking at Vanth, who cocked his head.
Oh yeah, little skulls, maybe this big?
He held his finger and his thumb apart to show Din.
Din blinked, thinking.
The mythosaurs?
Fett still wore small mythosaur signets on his shoulders.
Vanth shrugged.
If that's what they are, sure, little skulls with big tusks. Kinda intimidating. Though I am starting to gather that you Mandalorian types just like to be intimidating out of hand.
Din rolled his eyes.
Mythosaurs aren't a clan symbol, as far as I know, Din said, which wasn't saying much. He thought of Bo-Katan and her Talvode, with their blue and white armor, the Moth Owl signets on their pauldrons, the eyes on Kreese's helmet.
Not among my tribe, anyway. We used it to identify each other.
Is Boba Fett your tribe? Kesh asked.
Din shook his head.
No, we didn't meet until recently, after the crate. He followed me to a different planet. I think he was waiting for his armor to leave Tatooine.
Vanth shuddered.
He could have come here and took it. I'd had it for years.
Din looked at him.
Fett knew, he said.
But you were using it.
I have a hard time believing that he was all right with that, Vanth muttered, and Din was struck again by the urge to ask him what he thought Fett was like. Din held off, though, not wanting to upset the kids, who were still passing around pieces of his armor and whispering to each other, excited.
Armor is important, said Din. What you were doing with it wasn't dishonorable. You were looking after your people. That's to be respected, even if the armor wasn't yours.
Vanth snorted, but before he could argue, a wizened old man stood up, gently scattering children, and said, "Storm's over. Best go see what the damage is, eh?" Din didn't resist as the people around him started to move, shifting and streaming toward Cobb's door. Din's armor returned to him in pieces. He tried not to count, but couldn't help himself. His leg armor came back, his pauldrons, his gauntlets. He slotted each piece back into place while the rest of Mos Pelgo started to stir. Parents gathered up their children, neighbors clapped each other on the shoulder, limbs were stretched and popped.
"We'll take a look at the damage," said Vanth, rising and stretching himself.
"Then I'll call a quorum, yeah?"
Din didn't argue. The whole town moved and filtered up through Vanth's front door. Din followed. The desert was always very quiet and very still after a sandstorm. Mos Pelgo had been half buried. The white houses were red with sand. Din's speeder had toppled over. A few stands of puntan grass had been uprooted, beanstalks pulled up the roots, but the damage wasn't too bad.
"What can I do while you have your quorum?" Din asked, turning to Vanth, who was surveying the damage with his hands on his hips.
"You don't have to do any work, Mando," said Vanth, lips quirking.
Din shrugged.
"Better than sitting around," he said.
"Fair. Aten and the others went back to their village for the storm. They'll be back eventually, but would you mind keeping watch till they get back? We'll get you a pulse rifle, unless that spear you've got has a blaster in it."
Din shook his head. "It's just a spear."
Vanth clapped Din on the back and disappeared back into his house, emerging again a few minutes later with a battered rifle, which he passed off in exchange for Fett's datapad. Din accepted and chose a vantage point. The tallest building in Mos Pelgo was the cantina, so Din climbed up on the roof and settled into a resting stance, watching the desert. It was quiet up there. The sandstorm had taken up much of the afternoon, and the suns were setting, Mos Pelgo humming back to life as its people started the work of digging out their houses and their gardens, knocking the sand out of their vaporators, checking on their animals. Sitting for a few hours had made Din's sore leg tight and stiff. He flexed his toes and rotated his heel a few times, relishing the pleasant burn. The moons rose, and Din thought about the stories he'd listened to. The townspeople filtered back into Vanth's house, leaving their children behind. Din waited. Finally, as the night chill of the desert had started to creep into his Beskar, Vanth stepped out of his house and whistled up at Din. Din blinked, stretched, and hopped down off the roof. The impact jarred him some, but he kept his feet. He padded over to Vanth, whose expressive face was, for once, impassible. Din didn't push. Vanth would tell him, regardless of whether the news was good or bad. Rushing it wouldn't help anyone. He waited some more. "All right," said Vanth. His eyes flashed in the low light. "We accept."